Right, this is Pure Decking, show number 462 for Thursday, January the 13th, 1128. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game. And if somebody asks what your New Year's resolution was, tell them it was to not make life decisions based on arbitrary calendar dates. Tonight?
That's not a bad one. I'm not paying my taxes. Fuck it. I don't care what the calendar says.
That's pretty good. We have an Are You?
Well,
we have a Madman.
Hola, como esta, mi amigos?
So it was either going to be that opening joke or, you know, it's a new year and an old you. Get depressed. So, you know, but
New year, same problems.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's what everybody thought when, you know, 2020 was over. They're like, oh, thank God, it's a new year. This one's going to be somewhat... Nope. Nope.
All right. I did love that there was no enthusiasm over the new year, like, compared to 21. Yeah, they're like, yeah, it's going to be over. It's going to be great. And you're like, yeah, no, I think you're jumping the gun there, champ.
Well, you had a lot of the people who thought, oh, good, new president, it'll be better. No, not so much.
How's that working out for you?
I'd like to return this one. It's decrepit and kind of creepy. Can I have the old one back? I mean, he was an ass, but it was effective.
I mean, at least the old one, the batteries went flat.
Trump could be creepy, too, I guess. So maybe the kind of creepy isn't the best to... Yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah, but dude, you can handle creepy at gas for fucking $1.80 a gallon. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah.
When you can get your fucking steak and shit like that and the shelves aren't half empty. Yeah, I'll take the mean tweets, thanks. You know what I mean?
Well, my own when my mother is telling me that the it's like, oh no, it's not let's go Brandon anymore. It's Bear Shelves Biden. I'm like, okay. Thanks for keeping me informed. I haven't
what is
really,
it? I'm not up to speed on it.
It's Bear Shelves Biden now. So meme is to take pictures of the empty shelves at stores and post it on Twitter with that hashtag and watch people lose their mind. So,
wow.
But
it's today, man. So cruel.
Well, apparently it starts fights on Twitter with people losing their mind over it and saying, oh, you can't blame the president for that. But...
I mean, yes, you can.
It's all a gag anymore at this point, right? So,
it's all just one big giant joke.
You know, I'm just going to take my...
We just haven't hit the punchline yet.
Yeah, really. I'm going to take my prepper solution, a Glock with lots of ammo. Happy New Year! No, for anybody who's wanting to justify my attitude, I had a pretty bad break, pretty bad holiday there. So, not gonna go into it. Just if you want to know why I'm not not very optimistic here, I've got my reasons.
That's why we have Madman, the Eternal. Eternal optimist.
Yes. Somebody's got to be, you know, willing to say, oh, well, no, I don't guess we have to burn everyone at the stake. So, you know.
Just the evil ones.
Just the evil ones. The ones that didn't pay the proper bribe.
Oh, there's always that. So, speaking of things that should be burned at the stake, so for the past couple of weeks, there was this stuff with... Norton antivirus is adding a crypto miner, right? And that was, I mean, it's been out for a couple of weeks now, people talking about it. But I liked this article from Slate, which is why I'm wanting to start with it. Because it's not just that Norton is doing this and it's stupid. They're actually looking into why. So, yeah, over the summer, the antivirus company Norton announced it was adding a few new features to its LifeLock security software. The ability to mine cryptocurrencies using its Norton Crypto tool. True to Norton's roots as a security company, Norton Crypto was built as a way to help customers improve their cybersecurity by allowing them to mine cryptocurrency without having to rely on unvetted code or, quote, unvetted code to use on their machines that could be skimming from their earnings or even planting ransomware, unquote. Most of the crypto miners are open source. It's not that hard to find the one that looks good in the forums. I mean, these things aren't that hard to vet, you know? But, okay. To be sure, there are real security risks associated with downloading and running untrusted mining programs. But as a general rule, when a company refashions itself as a cryptocurrency business, it's usually because it's in trouble and looking for a way to pivot away from a failing business model to something new, cool, and potentially lucrative. So when a prominent antivirus firm takes a turn towards cryptocurrency, it's certainly possible to interpret the move as a sneaky money grab. That was the general gist of Doctorow's tweet about Norton Crypto this week, in which he pointed out that Norton takes a cut of the cryptocurrencies its users mine. 15% of the crypto allocated to each miner, according to its website. So, oh yeah, Norton's going to protect you from sneaky cryptocurrency miners that skim off your profits while they skim
off your profits.
Yeah.
It's a lovely business here. I hate to see if anything happened to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very mafia.
But the more interesting question is what it says about the market for antivirus software now that one of the most prominent manufacturers of the products is now trying to get into crypto. Once upon a time, say 10 years ago, antivirus software was one of the standard cybersecurity recommendations for everyone. Companies purchased licenses for all their corporate computers from one of the big vendors, and became a matter of course that all Windows computers, or at least all work computers, would be running a program from McAfee, Norton, or Kaspersky, or Advast, or one of the other usual suspects in the background at all times to scan for viruses. Most of these companies now offer a range of other security services in addition to the standard antivirus and malware programs. McAfee and Norton provide identity protection, VPN services, Kaspersky sells a password manager and system for parental controls, and Avast has both the secure browser and browser extension, just to name a few. In other words, the cybersecurity ecosystem has expanded well beyond just antivirus software. In fact, there's now some debate over whether antivirus programs are even particularly useful or effective line of defense for most devices, especially operating systems increasingly include built-in security features. For instance, a few years ago, Microsoft launched a built-in antivirus program, Microsoft Defender Antivirus with Windows 10. Pretty sure that was on 7, too. Apple devices, which is generally less targeted by the Windows ones, also include a malware scanning tool called XProtect, as well as a malware removal tool. While it may seem more like antivirus protection is always better, it's not always the case. In fact, antivirus programs have been known to try to uninstall each other if they think the other antivirus programs are malware because they contain signatures. Actually, that used to be a fun gag, would be to take a Windows box and install 3 or 4 different antiviruses and just watch what happened as they fought with each other.
Nice.
Because what would happen is they would see the signature files for each other and start trying to quarantine parts of the other antivirus program, which would trip the other antivirus's program anti-tamper protection. So it would start trying to restore its files and trying to shut down the other antivirus, which the other antivirus's tamper protection would interpret as, you know, tampering. And you could bring a very powerful computer to its knees just by installing 3 antivirus programs and watching them thrash the disk. I like where this guy's going here, though, that, you know, really it's not, you know, antivirus isn't really what it used to be. For many of us, the so-called security software packages pre-installed on our work computers have come to feel a little like malware. Clunky programs that require a lot of computing resources and cannot be shut down and are constantly popping up the screen with irritating messages. And most importantly, many of the cybersecurity incidents we worry about these days would probably have been pretty unlikely to caught or solved by antivirus programs anyways. True. That is true. Especially because 9 times out of 10 these days, it's attacks on your data through a web service that they're not even going after your desktop. I mean, crypto miners, or not crypto miners, but crypto lockers, you know, where they encrypt the disk and try to hold it for ransom or ransomware. That kind of stuff your antivirus is still going to try to help you prevent, but they suck at it. To the point that a lot of your security companies actually market their anti-ransomware as a separate product. As opposed to, because then it's just watching for something that starts encrypting lots of files on the disk rather than, you know, it's a behavior monitoring rather than a signature monitoring. But that's, yeah. However, where this guy's going here, he leaves out the fact that you're not going to see businesses get away from antivirus anytime soon because of regulatory requirements. So many regulations just say you must be running an antivirus, period, full stop. And, yeah, there's so much inertia behind that. You're never going to get rid of antivirus services in corporate machines. Home computers, though. Especially when most users are moving off of computers at all and using iPads and phones. Yeah. Hell, they're not even storing their data locally. Most people are storing their stuff in cloud services these days, whether it's Google or Apple, on their phones. So, yeah. Back to the article here. Perhaps then it's more accurate to say that antivirus software feels... Oh, I think I already read this. Feels like a... No, I didn't. No, I didn't. Okay. Feels a little bit like a historical vestige of past cybersecurity best practices. Why do we cling to them? Because that they were hammered into us for so many years, or that we have institutional contracts in place to provide these programs, or simply because it seemed like a little excuse could hurt at the moment when breaches are so much in the news. So when somebody asks the author, should I get a subscription to antivirus these days, I always tell them no. There's security tools I believe in and think some are worth paying for, like password managers or VPNs, but antivirus and identity protection services haven't made that list for years. And for most people, the built-in Windows Defender stuff is fine. For most home users?
You're not doing stupid shit, yeah.
Yeah. If you are doing stupid shit, don't do it on a Windows box. Spin up VirtualBox and install Linux and... then go do the stupid shit so that it's contained in a virtual machine and you can just delete it when you're done. That's what I do. Most of the time. Sometimes I'll get it out of another machine if I really want something I'm going to beat on long term. But I also have spare machines that I just use as beater machines. So I guess that may not be the usual practice for most people, though. While it's difficult to dislodge entrenched cybersecurity guidance, especially with the recommendations we now offer for how organizations should protect themselves, segmented network, multi-factor authentication, regular penetration testing can feel so much more cumbersome and more work-intensive than just installing some code on everyone's computers. So the author's not optimistic that any of us will be receiving work computers anytime soon that aren't burdened with bloated security packages. But the Norton Crypto announcement does suggest that even the big antivirus firms know that their products are no longer the vanguard of cybersecurity protections if they're thinking about branching into providing crypto mining. It remains to be seen whether Norton will be able to do this well, as its user support board is littered with complaints about it. Are they just turning it on? Are they just like doing mining anyways? Because if you haven't gone in and set up a wallet and your computer is mining, where's it going? I haven't looked into it because I haven't had Norton antivirus installed on a machine. I mean, I've got Symantec on my work computer, XP. But that's...
this lost on my edit.
I may have had it on a Windows 7 machine, but even then, I think I've been using the Symantec corporate stuff for so long because I had easy access to it for so long that I never bothered with Norton. Go ahead, Mebben.
If they're charging a fee for their users... Perhaps as you set up the antivirus, it sets up a wallet for you, dump the money into so they can take their cut more easily.
Well, maybe. The problem is that doing crypto mining on commodity hardware these days doesn't really make a lot of sense. I mean, you can do it. And, you know, if you got a whack of old machines and a cheap power bill, I mean, yeah, sure, go nuts. But, you know, mining on CPU is... pretty much pointless for most of your cryptocurrencies. GPU mining is still effective for some of them. But if you're talking the major players, Ethereum is switching over to proof of stake, not proof of work. and Bitcoin is all ASICs these days. I know some of the others you can still mine on GPUs, but like even Dogecoin and stuff like that, you need a, you know, fairly beefy setup to you know, do anything serious with it other than just, you know, use the computer as a space heater. So, yeah, I don't get what they think they're pulling by bundling it into their product line and then, I mean, charging a 15% mining fee? Really? I mean, you know, I'm sorry. If you guys want to do easy mining on your desktop, go set up NiceHash. It's easy and it's not a virus. And they don't take a 15% cut. They do charge fees when you do things with it, but, I mean, what system doesn't? I mean, but it's not a 15% cut of everything you do. But, let's see. More businesses are getting interested in cryptocurrency. Hardly news. Convergence of crypto mining antivirus is noteworthy. If only as a harbinger of these, Yeah, because he's comparing it to Kodak and some other things. But, I mean, I agree that, you know, consumer antivirus is, for most people, probably just not a thing that you need anymore. Like, you know, I know people who are still paying their yearly subscription for McAfee or their subscription for Norton, but they've been doing it for so long they don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, at work, you know, on corporate machines, even if the company wanted to say, yeah, antivirus is dumb, we're just wasting CPU cycles that could be put to better use, and, you know, time because of the alerts and somebody has to manage it. I mean, you know, corporate antivirus is not just install it and hope for the best, like a lot of people seem to think it is. If you're doing a major enterprise deployment, somebody's running that server and managing the policies of it and managing the updates and all the fun times. Used to do it. Actually, I've done that job quite a bit. So I have managed antivirus for corporate environments. I've managed antivirus for a university environment. It sucks. I mean, it is so many...
How many DMC complaints can you fucking deal with in one day?
Well, that was a different part of the job. But and I automated it so I could deal with hundreds. And that was good times. Because I introduced automation to a system that probably shouldn't have been automated. And so it went from processing a handful a day to like 50. And wow, it made people mad because I was actually processing all of the complaints we got versus just, you know, the people before who would do like a handful and delete the rest because most of them, you know, they didn't think it was worth doing. And it's like, nope, we can't get sued. And that is my job, is to prevent the school from getting sued. So, actually, I had somebody argue with me. It's like, well, the law they're standing on hasn't been tested in court.
Okay. Do you want to be the test case?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what they're telling us we should be the test case. And it's like, thanks. It's like, yeah, can you go lay on those train tracks and see if it kills you, please? We're just curious. But, the DMCA complaints were a completely different thing. But with corporate antivirus, you got to realize you have an agent running on every fucking machine. And you have a console that lets you make changes to the policies and things that that agent is doing on every fucking machine. And so with a handful of clicks, it's possible to brick an entire company through that antivirus portal. And if the server starts messing up, it gets amusing watching how the agents react to it. So believe me, I know. And I was.
Sounds like it's introducing a new security flaw that you could take advantage of. We need to get the root on the antivirus.
Yes, that is absolutely a thing, and yes, that is a concern. Usually, you want to hope your security administrators are using multi-factor and good passwords, but you know everybody's human and everybody lies. And security administrators are the worst about it because they think, oh, I'm a security person. I'm not going to get caught. I know what I'm doing. You know what the guy who just cut his thumb off was thinking before he cut his thumb off on the table saw? Said, I know what I'm doing. I don't. Just saying.
Oh, no, wait, that was after.
Yeah, Al was after. But before that, you know, the guy who's been woodworking for 10 years, you know, right before he cut his thumb off on that table saw, he thought, I've been doing this forever. I know what I'm doing. Are you just leaving that one? But, yeah, I think this guy's I like the read into it this guy's got that, you know, they see the writing on the wall for consumer antivirus and they're trying to pivot into something else and they think cryptocurrency is going to be a way to do it. I'd say they're a couple of years behind the curve and, you know, they've probably missed that boat. Now, if they had gone into NFTs.
There you go.
Gonna change your life.
That was a fun ride for 2 weeks.
Yep. Yep. So, anyways, let's see here. Next one up is from Ars Technica. And kind of a no duh, but at the same time, you know, it's good to see it acknowledged. The FTC has a, quote, plausible claim, unquote, that Facebook is an illegal monopoly, a judge says. Gee, you don't say.
Really?
The Federal Trade Commission's antitrust suit against Facebook may proceed, a federal judge has ruled. The company had filed a motion to dismiss the case, which the judge denied. U.S. District Judge James Boasberg, 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 has invented. I haven't drank that much tonight. Shit. Has invited the FTC to refile the case after throwing out its initial attempt where he found lacking. Second time lucky, Boasberg wrote on yesterday's opinion, apparently. Quote, the core theory of the lawsuit remains essentially unchanged, unquote, he said of the FTC's refiling. The facts alleged this time around to fortify those theories, however, are far more robust and detailed than before, particularly in regard to the contours of the defendant's alleged monopoly. The FTC argues that Facebook, now known as Meta, used a buy-and-bury strategy to stifle competition in the social networking space. Specifically, it alleges that Facebook purchased both Instagram and WhatsApp to prevent them from offering their large user bases new features that could have challenged Facebook's main platform. Boasberg found that the FTC cleared the pleading bar and that the bar for buy-and-bury allegations. In support of these claims, he cites the fact that Facebook had initially considered competing directly with Instagram before deciding to simply acquire the app, a move that reduced competition in the marketplace. The FTC's, quote, allegations that Facebook scaled down and eventually shuttered its own mobile sharing app after acquiring Instagram is consistent with the assertion that consumers would have a better and broader market of services to choose from had the acquisition never occurred, unquote, he wrote. Judge also pointed out that Facebook followed the same path when it faced competition from WhatsApp. The company briefly attempted to compete with WhatsApp before just deciding to buy it, he said. Boasberg also noted that Zuckerberg wrote in 2012 that he was, quote, the most worried about messaging WhatsApp, or about messaging. WhatsApp is already ahead of us in messaging the same way that Instagram was ahead of us in photos. I'd pay $1 billion for them if we could get them, unquote. 2 years later, Facebook bought the messaging company for $19 billion. Well, the FTC succeeded with the buy and bury claims. It failed to get the judge to proceed with its other allegation that Facebook used its policies to stifle competition by restricting access to its APIs. There are a few problems with the agency's approach. One, Boasberg did not invite the FTC to refile those allegations. And two, the judge pointed out that Facebook dropped the policies in 2018 and had not enforced them since 2013. The judge noted that in this instance, the FTC doesn't have the statutory authority to go after Facebook on past conduct. Restricting access to its APIs. I'm not certain that you have a case in that case. I mean, if you're saying that because you don't allow me to access your system, you have a monopoly, that's a little weird, you know? And that one doesn't work. You know, saying that they're buying their competition and not letting another social media platform grow, I agree, 100%. The whole, yeah, so, and I see why the judge threw that one out. Probably not for the same reason I'm thinking, though. I'm thinking that you can't tell somebody that you have to give them permission to access your stuff, and the judge has probably got some completely different legal ruling. Facebook had also been seeking FTC Chair Lina Khan's recusal because it claimed she came into the position with pre-existing opinions about the company's behavior. Here, Buzberg cited the FTC, stating that, quote, such contention misses its target, as Khan was acting in a prosecutorial capacity as opposed to a judicial one in connection with the vote, unquote, to pursue antitrust charges against Facebook. Buried in the judge's opinion are a few tidbits that suggest he might keep an open mind when assessing Facebook's alleged anti-competitive behavior and whether it has affected consumers. Quote, the advent of federal legislation addressing various privacy and advertising concerns related to consumer technology is consistent with the intuitive notion that consumers care about these issues and may prefer stronger protections in their services, he wrote. In other words, the mere fact that Congress is debating legislation suggests that the public cares about the issues, even as people continue to use Meta's products. So, it sounds like the initial filing from the FTC was pretty weak, but the judge said, no, you've got a case, you just need to fix it, and told them to refile it, but that it's a plausible claim. So, I mean, great. Now do Amazon and Google next.
Yeah.
Well.
In Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't know. With the refusing to let them access Facebook, there are a lot of companies now that you can't access unless you can access Facebook.
Oh, because of the
login thing. But I guess refusing to let them access is you can just create your own Facebook account. But I have a mechanic that doesn't have their own site because they just do it up on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what they mean, but I just the way that reads of, you know, trying to say it's monopolistic behavior to not allow other services to access their APIs. I mean, I have the, you know, if I'm setting up a business, I'm totally allowed to pick who I do business with, right? Now, I can't, you know, I can't go buying up every company in the marketplace and setting up a unnatural monopoly. I don't know the exact wording of the law, but I know natural monopoly is allowed. That's essentially where the company created the market and nobody else has entered it.
Not just created it, but it's hazardous for someone else to be there. Like a power company servicing one town is the classic example.
Mm-hmm.
Because a second power company, to be truly independent, would have to run its own power grid.
Well, I was actually thinking in terms of the private space. You know, if you've got a company and they're making a product and it's just nobody else makes that, you have a natural monopoly. And, you know, as long as you don't act in an abusive manner, you know, even though there's no competitors, you're probably not going to have a problem. But if the moment a competitor shows up, you know, you go to aggressive means to shut them down, you don't let the other people interest, you know, then you start running into the whole, you know, antitrust laws. So, but, you know, if it's just a natural monopoly due to market forces or the fact that nobody else has entered that market for whatever reason, you know, that's not actually illegal. But what Facebook is doing, where they're literally buying up the competition and stifling it, I'd say they got a case. I mean, yes, Facebook can point to Twitter and say, see, we're not the only social media game in town, but whereas it may not be a actual perfect definition true monopoly, it's a fucking monopoly.
Well, they call it an antitrust act because it doesn't just go after monopolies. Goes after trusts and oligopolies as well.
Yeah, well, you have several actors in a market, you know, working to control the market to keep prices high and be anti-consumer and all that fun stuff. But anyways, good on them. I want to see them hold these large tech companies. I want to see them held to the same standards as everybody else. I mean, yeah, breaking up AT&T did effectively jack and shit. But I mean, I at least want them to try. You know, they don't have to succeed at breaking up Facebook to get them to behave by just, you know, putting them through the antitrust process. Because if they think they're going to get broken up by the government and regulated, they'll behave. Well, they'll also probably, they might also do the Microsoft thing. Apparently, Microsoft never lobbied the government until after they were brought up on antitrust charges, and then they started sending stupid amounts of money on it. So that effect may not be as much as I'm hoping for, but you know what I mean. At least show somebody that, like, hey, you know, don't be a dick. All right. Next one up is from Vice. FBI honeypot phone company Anom shipped over 100 phones to the United States. Now, this one's going to take a bit to get into why I wanted to talk about it, but it's when I get through it, you'll see why. Anom, A-N-O-M, the encrypted phone company that was secretly commandeered by the FBI and which surreptitiously provided all of its users' messaging to the authorities, shipped many more devices into the U.S. than was previously understood, according to multiple files obtained by Motherboard. The news highlights that although much of the Anom operation focused on devices overseas, Anom phones were still present in the U.S., raising questions about how many total devices were in the country during the years-long undercover operation. For legal reasons, the FBI did not monitor outgoing messages from Anom devices determined to be inside the U.S. Instead, the Australian Federal Police monitored them on behalf of the FBI, according to previously published court records. And those court records unsealed shortly before the announcement of the Anom operations. The FBI Special Agent Nicholas Chevron wrote that the FBI received Anom user data 3 times a week, which contained messages of all users of Anom with some exceptions, including the, quote, messages of approximately 15 Anom users in the U.S. sent to any other Anom device. The internal Anom files obtained by Motherboard show that more than 15 phones were shipped by Anom to addresses within the U.S. One included a shipment of over 100 devices in March of 2020 to a P.O. box in New York. Another was for a shipment of 10 phones to a unit in San Diego. A third was to the same drop-off point in San Diego. Anom itself arranged the shipment of these devices. Anom also worked with a system of distributors who used an online portal to keep track of their own sales. The files obtained by Motherboard, which describe the shipments, don't include Anom's phones that individual Anom distributors may have sent to the U.S. It's not clear whether devices described in the files were actively used by Anom customers, whether they stayed in the U.S. or were sent on to to users in other countries, or if the phones were destined for genuine Anom customers or for some other purpose, such as the FBI itself to use. The San Diego FBI led the Anom operation, though Motherboard could not directly contact the San Diego shipment described in the files to the FBI, or connect the shipment to the FBI. Quote, sorry, can't help you. A person in control of a phone number mentioned in the San Diego shipments told Motherboard in a WhatsApp message. When Motherboard followed up a day later and showed that they had access to the internal Anom files, the person said, still can't help you. Which, duh, you're messaging some random FBI guy who's got the phone number right now. Of course he's going to say, sorry, can't help you. He doesn't even know what it is. He's just going to say, nope.
Wow.
The person in control of the phone number linked to the New York shipment did not respond to a request for comment. How do you know the person was even in control of it? For all you know, it's a phone in a desk drawer somewhere. The National Press Office for the FBI declined to comment. Bill McNerma, Public Affairs Officer for the San Diego FBI, wrote in an email, quote, due to the pending nature of the case, we are unable to comment at this time, which is usually the case before these things have gone to court. Kelly Thornton, Director of Media Relations for the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of California, also declined to comment. In the court record, Chevron wrote that Anom's creator, a convicted drug trafficker who later offered Anom to the FBI for its use in its own investigations, quote, controlled the distribution.
Offered, in air quotes.
control the distribution of anon devices in consultation with the FBI. And there's why I wanted to talk about it. So, how the hell did the FBI take over a phone message or a phone company that was sending out encrypted devices and just start, you know, it's a backdoor to all of them, of course. I'm not going to read the rest of the article. It just details that's what they did, is that they backdoored all of it and that they were trying, you know, that they assumed it was for drug trafficking and they were just monitoring everything going on. And then when they decided a phone was in the United States, rather than dealing with the whole problem of a warrant, they got the Australian police to monitor the U.S. citizens. Now,
welcome to Five Eyes.
I know. That may not go against the letter of the law, but it certainly goes against the spirit of it.
Oh, it's against the spirit.
It's not just against the spirit. There's precedent involved. Once the FBI asked Australia to monitor this, they became governmental actors and would have been, for the evidence they gathered to be used in court, it would have to go through the same procedure as if the cops tried to get something in the U.S.
Well, the one line here I need to read about that is it's a little lower in the article. Quote, but if any devices landed in the U.S., in the United States, the Australian Federal Police agreed to monitor these devices for any threats to life based on their normal policies and procedures. So supposedly the only ones they were sending over to the FBI was like, you know, a message that was related to life, to threats to life. Well,
yeah, I'm sure.
Breathing is a threat to life. And I'm sure it's very easy to find a way to define dealing drugs as a threat to life. So, what kind of filtering do we think they were actually doing? this whole thing stinks.
It does.
I mean, if the FBI is just going to go take over company, small operations offering encrypted phones and backdoor them, I mean, damn.
I mean, at least, you know, running the largest child pedophile fucking website, you know.
Well, they shut it down for a couple of weeks, but, you know.
A couple of weeks.
The fact that I hate that you bring that up because it makes you remember the name of the website. And it's like, you have a kiddie porn site named Playpen. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, it fucking grosses me out too, man.
So, I mean, it's just... I mean, we're living in the cyberpunk future that everybody warned us about, right? It's like, great, Neil Stephenson was right. Lovely. So what three companies are going to be left in meat space? What was it? Domino's, FedEx, and I forget the third one. Because everything else was all online in the metaverse. I've got a metaverse article next. So it's easy to roll into that. So and the metaverse article I want to talk about specifically. Because you and I will recognize immediately what this article is. Psychros says Domino's is more of a tech company than a pizza company. It actually, there's a lot of companies like that where, I mean, there's a lot of companies that are almost more of a technology company nowadays because, well, technology is the wrong word. They're a logistics company where their product is not how to have minimum wage employees who are probably high make a pizza and get it out the door and deliver it to you. Their product is their back end. It's a logistics engine. It's a back end. It's an order tracking. And then they can take that product, they can disassociate it from pizza, and they can sell it to other companies. And there's a lot of companies that have done that. Actually, a company I worked for previously, they wanted to take their in-house product. You know, they were talking about taking some of their in-house software they had developed and segmenting it out and selling it to other companies. Never actually happened because the software was shit. But, you know, they tried it. Or they were going to try it. Actually, well, I don't know if I can talk about that. It's only been
If you think you can't, you can't.
That's, I mean, well, let's just say they thought they were going to sell the in-house developed software. We had some people who thought they were going to sell the in-house developed software as their own product without the owners of the company that they wrote the software for knowing about it. So, whoops.
Nothing like a little corporate theft.
It ended well for them. Let me just put it that way.
We were enhanced shopping, sir. No, this is enhanced designing.
It wasn't 2021 yet, so anyways, next article is a Metaverse article, and you're going to laugh when I start reading this because you're going to recognize exactly what this is. This is from CNBC. Investors are paying millions for virtual land in the Metaverse. Key points.
That's Second Life?
Mad Men got it too. Yes. They took an old Second Life article and just swept out the word Second Life from Meta.
It's going to be a great corporate environment.
Real estate in virtual worlds, sometimes called the Metaverse, is going for millions of dollars in some cases. The most expensive spots are near where lots of users congregate. For example, someone recently paid $450,000 to be Snoop Dogg's virtual neighbor in a virtual world called the Sandbox. Suave and I were looking at Sandbox. There is so much money tied up in that thing because it's like, oh, what do you have to do to get in? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's...
Because you had to buy these tokens that were NFTs, and it was several thousand dollars in Ethereum to buy the NFT. I was like, oh my God, no.
Yep.
So yeah. Yeah, it's no secret that the real estate market is skyrocketing, but the COVID pandemic is creating another little-known land rush. Indeed, some investors are paying millions for plots of land. Not in New York or Beverly Hills, in fact, the plots that do not physically exist here on Earth. Rather, the land is located online in a set of virtual worlds that tech insiders have dubbed the Metaverse. Where's the button?
Insiders did not dub it that. This is a fucking marketing ploy by a giant bipedal reptile.
Well done, madman.
Prices for plots have soared as much as 500% in the last few months, ever since Facebook announced it was going all in on virtual reality, even changing its corporate name to the Meta Platforms. Quote, the Metaverse is the next generation of social media, unquote, said Andrew Kugel? I don't know. CEO of Toronto-based Tokens.com, which invests in metaverse real estate and non-fungible token-related digital assets. Y'all heard about NFTs? Only good part of that South Park episode. then they start going, you can go to a carnival, a music concert, or a museum, Kugel said. In these virtual worlds, real people interact as cartoon-like characters called avatars, similar to a real time. It's a fucking Second Life article that they just swapped the words.
Yeah.
I'm not going to finish it, except...
Ridiculous.
They're predicting it that these meta platforms are going to grow into a trillion-dollar business. Major artists such as Justin Bieber, Ariana Grande, and DJ Marshmello are performing as their own avatars. Even Paris Hilton DJed a New Year's party on her own virtual island.
I mean, if these names were being dropped in 2010, maybe. But no, these people are fucking obsolete now. You know, I'd say celebrity is obsolete at this point.
Why go to a virtual carnival unless you can shoot the other avatars and force them to respawn in the clown cage?
The amount of horseshit that used to go on in Second Life, they think the metaverse is going to be this corporate fucking button-down idea. I'm here to slowly tell the boys, that's not going to happen.
Have I ever told you guys about my very first experience in Second Life? Before I met, you know, any of the old crew that we used to run with in there, I mean, not Madman, obviously. I've known Madman since middle school. But, you know, everybody else, before I met any of you guys, the first time
I don't know what
Second
you'd
Life,
even be doing in there if you weren't meeting up with...
Well, that's what I got into. That was what I got in there for, was to, you know, go meet that group because it sounded interesting. But it drops you off when you first make a character in one of the little public areas, right?
Yeah, you got that fucking noob island or whatever it is.
Right. So you
then you got to learn how to walk and shit.
So I logged in there into Noob Island, and, you know, of course the voice chat was on. And so I spent a minute getting my audio fixed because, of course, I did. It never worked right the first time in Second Life.
It did.
And, you know, but it was doing the spatial thing. So, you know, I could kind of hear somebody was, you know, giving this song soliloquy over there. I couldn't hear what it was. So I figured out how to walk my character over there because there was this group around this guy who was up on a pedestal. And when you get close enough so that the audio wasn't, you know, mucked up anymore, I suddenly realized he was giving a long song about his penis. That was my first experience in Second Life, was a man singing about his dick.
And it only went downhill from there.
Well, I met you guys, so I mean, you know.
Like, it's not going to be what they think it's going to be. Like, I don't think they won't be able to lock it down. They want it to be like, well, it's virtual reality. I'm trying to get my idea together.
They think it's going to be the corporate version of the Ready Player One movie.
Yes. Yeah.
No, it's going to be Ready Player One if the bad guy won. That's what they think it's going to be.
It's just going to be a Skype call with Jeffrey Toobin. That's what's going to happen.
Have you seen Walmart's rendition of the virtual shopping they're planning to do in the metaverse? That is the most terrible, terrible way to shop. You're combining all of the bad things about going to a store and shopping and all of the bad things of being online.
Well, it misses the point, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to recreate the physical experience in the virtual space. No! Don't do that. If I'm shopping, I don't want to walk around a virtual world trying to shop. I want to scroll through a list of products arranged by category. It's faster and it's easier.
And price,
yes.
And like the only reason I want to interact with Walmart like that is because it totally cuts out the middleman. I don't have to put pants on. I'm not going to get arrested for drink driving. And waving my dick in a virtual world won't get me arrested for fucking anything. Hopefully not.
Right. So if you're going to do that, there are some things that doing it in a flat 2D web page makes so much more sense than trying to recreate in a virtual 3D space.
That, right.
I mean, there are other things that making the 3D virtual space absolutely makes sense. I went to a VR conference a couple of years ago now. Almost exactly 2 years ago now. It was great. You know, it was a security conference. It was in VR. It worked. Talked with a bunch of people. You know, saw some presentations. Met some people I had met at actual conferences, so I'd said hey to them. And, good times. Stuff like that. It works. It absolutely does. And you really do get that sense of being there, at least on my little first-gen, you know, Oculus Quest. I don't ever plan on buying another Oculus headset because I don't particularly appreciate what Facebook has done with the platform. But you do get a sense of space. You do get that sense of being there. And for things like that, or video games, it makes sense. But for shopping? Fuck off. You know? I mean, if I am, there are reasons, I still go back to the fucking command line on a regular basis at work because it makes more sense than trying to click around in a GUI, let alone trying to do this shit in VR. I can only imagine what a pain in the ass it would be to try to do my day job with the pair of VR controllers that only have a handful of buttons on them.
Oh God, you're waving your arms around like Minority Report. Anybody who doesn't really know what you're doing, they think you have performance fucking dance. You know?
But that's my point, is it's like it doesn't make sense. So
you're doing lesbian dance theory, no advanced mathematics.
So anyways, the article goes on about how there's all these companies just dumping stupid amounts of money into metaverses and how it's a risky investment, which of course it is. But yeah, man, I mean, it's Second Life all over again. It really is. Cycros says, any metaverse worth partaking in by companies will be standalone sims. Nobody hosts their corporate. Okay, yes, you're right. And I agree with you 100% on this, because then he also references, you know, Newsreel and Second Life in 2007. And it's totally what we were talking about, too. But yep. I think the future of it is going to be in a similar model to email and web hosting, where, sure, you could farm it out to a hosting company if you want, or you could, you know, spin up your own on a box in your closet, or, you know, go to a data center or build a data center and host it. But it's going to be where you have kind of an open communication standard where I can connect to your server running a sim or environment or whatever you want to call it. And maybe I'll have an inventory / identity / what else would you call it? Presence server somewhere that I connect to. That might be like your email server, or, you know, might be more of an account server, or maybe even a home sim that you would run, so that, you know, a place where your avatar's possessions and your account and all that stuff's managed. Almost kind of like, what's the open source Twitter? The Fediverse? Is that what they call it?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm not up on those things.
But yeah, that's exactly. Mastodon. Yes, Cycros got me. Mastodon, that was it. I think that's what it's going to be more like, is if you want it to succeed. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to have one company try to control it, and they're going to lock it down, and just, you know, a handful of people will use it. It'll be a novelty for about 15 minutes, and it'll go away. But, you know, I mean, I there's precedent for this. Compare America Online or Prodigy to web pages today. Which one survived and which one do we still use?
Yeah.
So it's going to be whichever one is an open standard that has an open communication platform, and then your clients are also open standard. Not necessarily open source.
Yeah, but standards.
But standards for communication protocol and
yep.
your common things like an avatar inventory appearance and things like that.
But how are they going to keep control of the avatars in Metaverse?
They won't.
I'm pretty sure they don't want what I used to rock around in, walking around in a corporate environment. And I was relatively tame. I was just cyberpunk as fuck.
Well, I mean, you could always take the Big Brother approach and walk around with all the dog dongs hanging off your avatar.
That's what I mean. How are they going to stop dudes like that? Like, you think you got a bathroom tranny problem now? Fuck.
Well, they'll do it the way some of the VR. What was the one I did to the conference call? Not Rec Room. I can't remember what it's called now. There's Rec Room. There's VR Chat. And the Microsoft one is the one the conference was actually in. And I am so blanking on the name. I think it started with an I. Anyways, the way they get around it is, rather than having a freeform avatar, you are stuck with a Lego man or, you know, some variation on a cartoony person, right? So
I can really express myself in the metaverse.
Yeah, basically you're a Lego man without legs. And then if you know, approved products that you can attach to your avatar and certain things that are probably going to be based on certain shapes. So, like, you know.
Okay, so yeah. Another reason why this metaverse will fail, how can I fuck my avatar next door to me? If there's no sex element in the meta, right, it's not going to sell.
Cycros says it'll be a Pokemon Go style avatar. I think I played Pokemon Go like once. I don't remember setting up an avatar.
Maybe that's
matter.
His point.
And you have to pay real money for skins and clothings. Oh, be like Fortnite. Yeah, there you go. V-Bucks.
Okay, so can I join the meta if I decide to be a ghost? No avatar, no skin, nothing. Does it cost me nothing?
Yeah, that'll probably cost extra.
Around haunting people?
Yeah. Said I did set up an avatar, but it's entirely meaningless. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be generic person number one, generic person number two, vaguely male features, vaguely female features. And then
that's what I want.
And then you can pay money for approved items that have gone through a review process that you can buy through the Meta Marketplace.
Non-offensive fucking vanilla.
And then you have shit like VR chat, which is effectively Second Life in VR, except all the creation tools are the Unity engine as opposed to built into the client. And you totally have people walking around as naked anime chicks. So, yeah, the couple of times I've logged into VR chat, it's been a very interesting experience.
I've seen some videos. It's not a place I want to go.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I had some conversations with some people in there. It wasn't terrible, but it was a little bit jarring when the 3-foot-tall anime little girl, you know, has some deep voiced dude behind it. Right? It's like what? You know, that's jarring and a little unexpected, but whatever. So there'll be NFTs. Don't worry. Yeah, probably. All right, last article for tonight. We don't want to get too far over time, and it is already, I don't think we start, if we started late, it was only by a minute or so, so I want to kind of...
Yeah, we didn't start to.
Let's see, last article is from Ars Technica, and is hilarious. Scammers put fake QR codes on parking meters to intercept parkers' payments.
Oh, well played. That is absolutely brilliant. I am not even mad, fucking impressed, to be honest. Because these retards will fucking scan any barcode these days, especially after the whole Wooflu shit.
Scammers,
fucking brilliant.
Scammers in a few big Texas cities have been putting fake QR codes on parking meters to trick people into paying the fraudsters. Parking enforcement officers recently found stickers with fraudulent QR codes on pay stations in Austin, Houston, and San Antonio. San Antonio police warned the public of the scam on December 20th, saying that people attempting to pay for parking using those QR codes may have been directed to a fraudulent website and submitted payment to a fraudulent vendor. Similar scams were then found in Houston and Austin. It's quite literally physical phishing with QR codes.
I know, it's brilliant. I'm just pissed I didn't think of it first.
You set up a website that looks, you know, is either a clone of the real website that you use to pay for your parking on a phone, or just looks close enough that people aren't going to question it. And you just put the stickers on the little parking meters. You don't even have to cover any. Oh my God, how many people are going to pay you the $12 for the evening of parking, thinking they've paid it, and then come back and be like, "But I paid for parking. What the hell?" And of course, they can't get a refund because your website's a black hole. But
oh, I just can't wait to tell my wife about it so she can shit herself every time she signs into something now. That QR code.
You got the link, so have fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. Similar scams are found in Austin and Houston. The Austin Transportation Department started examining their own meters after being notified of a QR code scam by the city of San Antonio in late December, when more than 100 pay stations were stickered with fraudulent codes, Fox 7 Austin reported last week. Austin officials checked the city's 900 or so parking stations and found fraudulent codes on 29 of them, according to a KXAN article. The fake QR codes reportedly directed people to a quick pay parking website at the domain passportlab.xyz, which is now offline. It's not clear how many people, if any, were tricked into paying the fraudsters. Quote, "We don't use QR codes at all for this very reason, because they are very easy to fake or place on the devices." Unquote. Austin parking manager Jason Redfern told KXAN, quote, "And we have heard from industry leaders that this would be a possibility," unquote. Austin accepts payments directly at the meter or with coins or credit or with the Park ATX mobile payment app. Austin city officials said in a press release that they are, quote, continuing to inspect the city's more than 900 pay stations to ensure that there are no additional QR codes in use, unquote. Austin urged people to call 911 if they see somebody without a city employee badge tampering with a pay station. Any person who believes they were a victim of credit card breach due to recent parking meters should also file a police report and notify their card issuer immediately. Houston officials found 5 meters with fake QR codes and removed the stickers, according to KPRC2. Like Austin, Houston does not use QR codes on parking meters but does offer a payment app. While the scam seems to have been centered in Texas, it could be repeated anywhere. If you see a QR code on a parking meter, ignore it and make sure you pay the city directly. And, you know, it's not just parking meters. I've seen gas stations that have the Apple Pay QR codes and, you know, all kinds of like little vendors and food wow. trucks and shit like
never
that. Never
thought
them.
About that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'd be easy. I mean, if you see an existing QR code, just slap your own sticker over it. But,
yeah.
you know, they were going after things that they knew didn't even have a real one. So, $12. That sounds like Miami street parking garages are $6. The markup is to... So, Cycros, I live roughly in the area of Nashville, not in Nashville, but within, you know, an hour range of it. So, there you go. I've covered about half of the state of Tennessee. Oh, no. Yeah, parking in Nashville, $12 for the evening is cheap. So, during the day, for like 2 or 3 hours... be more like 4 or 5, but yeah, if you're going to park for the evening, $12 is cheap, especially if you're going to go up to like 2nd Street. So, anyways, I guess they say out of Boston proper, but in the outlying cities, it's never that much on the street. Oh, yeah, I guess that's just going to vary by area and what people are willing to put up with, right? So... anyways, I mean, on one hand, I love the scam because, wow. On the other hand, you assholes, because so many people are going to fall for that shit.
Oh, no, it's great. I'm fucking firing my printer up now.
I thought you'd enjoy that, so let's do this. Oh, I'm sorry, Madman. Did you have anything on the QR codes before I moved on?
No, I thought it was hilarious. It's
awesome. All right. So what I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is an interesting little website from Neil.fun, specifically an area he calls dark patterns. So websites on the internet are constantly trying to get you to complete actions, whether it's buying something, recommending a friend, or posting private information. There's a lot of value in getting you to perform specific actions. However, some websites go too far and try to trick or mislead you into doing what they want. This has led to what are called dark patterns, or shady ways of tricking you into performing actions without you knowing. So, what this page is, I mean, they're not great examples, but they are examples of all of these dark patterns. And I've seen a lot of these on other websites where, you know, he talks about, you know, websites when you're going to buy something, putting other things in your basket. Usually it's going to be some kind of a protection plan or delivery insurance or other bullshit like that so they can get an extra $5 out of you for nothing. You know, the one you see a lot is confirm shaming. That's the next one down where it's like, do you want to sign up for our newsletter? Yes. No, I hate puppies. I mean, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, the no button says I hate puppies and want to murder children or bullshit like that. You know, then it goes into fake friend requests. Tom on MySpace, anybody? Apparently, some social sites do fake notifications, trying to get you to interact with the site more. The one I've definitely seen this on professional, because I get a lot of professional email spam at work from companies where they do a segmented email list where they don't have one unsubscribe button. They have their marketing newsletter. They have their offers newsletter. They have their announcements newsletter. They've got it broken up into as many as possible so that to try to unsubscribe, you have to, you know... And of course, the bottom checkbox will be subscribe me to everything. So, you know, you have to, like, find the magic pattern to checkbox in to get them to leave you the hell alone. Which is why it's much better just to put their sending email address on a spam list. And of course, the share the article, desperate friend requests, you know, messing with the UI so that the buttons swap places. you know, unreasonable terms of service that you have to agree to, trying to get your contacts for spam, and then the classic, you know, download ads, which is the real download button, right? We've all seen that one, where 30 or 40 download buttons on the page, most of them are banner ads.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's a good example of all these things, and it's good to be aware of it, because when you know to look for them in the number of websites you see pulling this shit, yeah. Anyway, so it's a nice little set of examples. They're pretty basic, but they're good to know about. That's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure decking every Thursday, except for when I decide to take breaks. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. Madman, closing thoughts.
That is moving to Texas.
You're moving to Texas?
No, Meta's moving to Texas. The lizard has announced he needs to go sun himself on a better rock.
Oh, is California too expensive? Just like for everybody fucking else. Of course, California tried to pass a law that they could tax other state citizens. I don't think it passed, but it's like, fuck. Are you closing thoughts?
Off the madman, I have nothing, man. I have nothing.
That's I'm gonna play sounds now.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Go nose down and call tonight.
And I'm quoting a massive dose of Viagra, you wake up.
Shut up, Wesley.